We've been discussing about how Radha is great. She is the greatest. Now Radhashtami is over. So we can get back to normalcy. Actually, Krishna is great. He is supreme. He's God. If we go to an interfaith meeting, we can agree with all the other theists there that God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. We're not going to go into interfaith meeting and say that, well, our concept of God is that he's a village boy running around after cows with no shoes on and he has a girlfriend. Actually, he has many girlfriends. No, we're not going to say that. You ever go to an interfaith meeting? No. You went to one once, right? Once, that was enough. So Krishna is supreme. And all the Vedas, all the great personalities, they all declare. It's as Srila Prabhupada often quotes, Shankaracharyas, even Shankaracharya, the impersonalist, Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they all say that Krishna is supreme. It's right there in Bhagavad Gita. They are bread and butter, we can say. It's an English saying. I guess in Tamil you'd say rice and sambar. It's your daily food. And sometimes you can have, I don't know what, idiyappam or chakar pongal. In English you say, sometimes we have some cake. So we had some talk about Radha. And then we should give out to bread and butter. Bhagavad Gita, it's very clear. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham, Shashvatam Divyam, Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum, Ahustvam, Rishaya Sarve, Devarshya Naradas Tata, Asito Devalo Vyasa, Swayam Chaiva Bravushime. Arjuna declares, Krishna, you are the Param Brahma, the supreme, what, how do you say Brahma in English? What is the translation that Srila Prabhupada gives? Param Brahma, I don't have Bhagavad Gita. You should know the translation also. You are the supreme, everything. Brahma is Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, everything here. And everything there also. It's all Brahma. So he's this. Among all the things, Krishna is supreme. Vastu. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu. He's the vastavik vastu. He's the actual thing or entity. Krishna is supreme. And everyone declares. And we. Srimad Bhagavatam also is not different. The essence of all the Vedas, Nigama Kalpa Taro Galitam Palam, starts off with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and Janmadhyasya Yataha, he from whom everything emanates, in whom everything rests, in whom everything ultimately enters. Yang Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruta Stun Vanti Divyai Stavai Vedai Sangha Padakramo Parnishadai Gayanti Yang Samagaha Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pash Yanti Yam Yogino Yasyantam Navidu Surasara Garna Devaya Tasmai Namaha. We offer respects to that God who is glorified by all the gods, Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra, the Maruts, all of them, and who is praised in all the Vedas and Karorali literatures, whom the best of yogis see in their meditation, whose limits cannot be found by gods or demons. So that's it. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the topmost shastra. It's undisputed. Nothing more to be said. So, topic finished. No more. Radha's the cake. We can go back to Radha next year, isn't it? Hey, in between we chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Means, oh Krishna, oh energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. One thing though, in Bhagavatam, we find young Brahma, Varunendra, all the great demigods, but in the beginning they praise him. But in the beginning of Bhagavatam, the Muhyanti Yat Suryaha, all the demigods are bewildered about him. And we do find in the Bhagavatam that even Brahma was bewildered by Krishna's potencies. Indra was by his potencies. Varuna, Krishna went to Varuna Loka. And Varuna offered respect to the little boy, Varuna. But Nanda Maharaj was there also. He didn't offer respect. All the great personalities describe him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but not Nanda Maharaj, or Yashoda, or Sridham, or Sudama, or and so many cowherd boys. What to speak of the gopis, Lalita, Vishaka. Lalita, Vishaka, Adi, Jato, Shaki, Vrinda. Radha doesn't say he's supreme. And Srimad Bhagavatam also informs us about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And how one of them left the Rasalila. The Rasalila, the topmost expression of Krishna's love. It's not mentioned in Bhagavatam who that gopi is, but it's been made clear by different acharyas. I quoted that verse from Gita Govinda. Kaṃsārya api saṃsāra vāsana baddha śrīṅkhalā rādhā ādhāya hṛdaye tyajya vraja sundarīnām. The enemy of Kaṃsa, the killer of Kaṃsa, being bound up by the chains of desire for enjoyment, taking Radha in his heart. She'd run away, but he had her in his heart, but he didn't just want her in his heart, he wanted to hold her to his heart directly. So he gave up all the other beautiful girls of Vrindavan. So many acharyas have explained this. The whole Gita Govinda is spun, the story is spun around this point. Of course, not fiction, it's fact. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, among the many acharyas who have discussed it, Shatakoti Gopi Madhavaman Rakite Narilo Karijatam. Shatakoti? It means unlimited, practically. 10 million times 100, unlimited gopis. They couldn't keep his mind. After Radha had left the Rasalila, so many gopis, they couldn't keep him there in the Rasalila. And we think about the gopis. Should we think about gopis? Are we allowed to do that? Is it allowed? Well, Srila Prabhupada in one letter wrote that because he was discussing about writing for standards for writing in Back to Godhead magazine, and he wrote that it's not that we have edited, I'm paraphrasing here, it's not that we've edited the gopis out of existence. We worship them, but it's just that it's not a matter for plastering all over the internet what Krishna's doing with the gopis. Well, wait a minute, I'm speaking here. It's going on the internet also. But anyway, presumably, this will be devotees. This is subject matter for devotees. And again, that's why Shukdev himself was somewhat reticent in describing these pastimes. He went through 9 cantos, and even then, he was somewhat reserved. And later, for devotees only, so many books were written by Rupa Goswami and others. So, even one gopi, they're so beautiful. Vraja Sundari Nam, what kind of beauty that we cannot understand. In this world, so many men become famous for their astonishing deeds. They go and conquer different countries, or very powerful. But the most famous women, they didn't do anything except be beautiful. That's all. Who are the famous women in India today? Or most popular? Some names of some film stars. I don't know what their names are. I know from previous times. There was Sridevi and Madhuri Dikshit and Rekha and Aishwarya Rai, the famous names. And in the West, there are so many names. You must know Sophia Loren. You heard of her? Who else is there? Oh, should I really think about these things? Anyway, there are so many. Well, they weren't just being beautiful, they were acting also. Okay, give them some credit. It's true. They were doing something, acting. But it's on the basis of their bodies, they became very beautiful. They became very famous. You don't see many actresses who are not big famous actresses who are not beautiful. There are, actually. Glenda Jackson, I can think of. You don't know. I mean, no, you didn't see that in Poland, her movies. I just reminded of her recently because I saw that she gave some award to Parashuram in England. She's an MP or something now. Hope she doesn't mind if she hears this. I wouldn't be the first to say so. So anyway, they're so beautiful that people, they like to see, and you go on the internet and you get barraged with all these advertisements with beautiful women. So many beautiful women out there. I mean, I don't go to porn sites, obviously, but just on a regular news site or anything. Pop, 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 come pop. The advertisements, just full of all this beautiful women. So people are enamored by beautiful women. You take one apsara, not even the Rambha or Tilotama, just any ordinary apsara, and you completely defeat any of all these big, famous, beautiful women, and then nothing compared to the Lakshmis of Vaikuntha, and nothing compared to any of the gopis. Nothing. So we can understand Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Okay, now we got back to it. He's God. He is God. This is the best definition of God. All-powerful, yeah. Yeah, definitely he's all-powerful. I mean, don't contest that. All-powerful. Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? In Vrindavan, he's not all-powerful. That's what makes it so delicious. Well, that's one of the things that makes it so... He's all-powerful, he's all-knowing... He's all-pervasive, all-pervading, both all-pervasive and all-pervading. We find in Vishu Sahasranam, there are different names. Vyapi, Vyapak. So not only does he have the potency to all-pervade, but he is all-pervade. So, but the real thing is that he's the supreme enjoyer of so many beautiful women and everything else. Srila Prabhupada once was in one talk discussed how people criticize Krishna. He has so many queens, 16,108 queens. And they say, oh, Krishna is so lusty. And Prabhupada said, if you take it like that, you have to admit he's the supreme lusty. You cannot fulfill your lust with 60. You may desire to do so, that's your rascaldom, but Another time, in America, one professor came to see Prabhupada, Bengali, so I'm told. And he was insisting, Krishna is immoral because he dances with others' wives. And Prabhupada was being very tolerant. All of a sudden, Prabhupada became very angry and said, "You are immoral. You have one wife. You think it's your wife. She's Krishna's servant. You are immoral. You have taken her." Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. This is actually a very important distinction. If we go to an interfaith conference, we may not discuss these things. We'll agree to agree on the most basic things. God is omniscient. I think you don't know that. All you Sanskrit students can understand. Omniscient means sarvagya. Omnipresent means sarvavyapi. And all-powerful means sarva-shaktiman. So we can all agree on that. But if we emphasize he's all-powerful, then we come to a religion of fear. And actually these religions in the Western world, you have to fear God. And why fear? Because he'll throw you into hell. Okay, that's true. We don't deny that, but if we emphasize he's the supreme enjoyer, and enjoyment means love, and we are his eternal servants in a relation of love, then we come to a religion of love. And everyone has their own taste, but personally, I'm much inclined to a religion of love rather than a religion of fear. So Krishna is supreme, and for his enjoyment, everyone in Vrindavan, they're simply, in Vrindavan, Krishna was the cynosure of all eyes. That's the first words I read in Srila Prabhupada's books in this lifetime. And everyone is loving Krishna, but love means fun also. Srila Prabhupada, again, another example, very nice example he gave of love. How he told the story of Gladstone. What was his first name? William, I think. I'm looking at you because you're supposed to be a teacher, but it doesn't mean you're sarvagya. You don't know everything. You probably know all the names in Polish history that I wouldn't be able to pronounce. So I think it's William Gladstone. Anyway, Gladstone. He wasn't known as a very loving person. He was the Prime Minister of Britain, and he was known for being so severe in the Parliament that just by his glaring at people, they'd stop. And there's someone in the opposition who say, "I'm the Prime Minister." And Gladstone would just look at them and they'd just wither away. He was such a tough person. He was the paradigmatic British stiff upper lip. You heard of that? The British stiff. British people aren't meant to smile because everything's very serious. It is very serious if you're going out conquering the world. You don't smile at people, you shoot them dead. Unless they do what you say, right? That's how you conquer the world. Right, you're in the army. In the army, what do? When you see the terrorists on you, what do? Smile at them? No, you shoot them. They're shooting you, you shoot them. So Gladstone was a tough guy. And someone had an appointment to see him in his office. He was told to sit outside. So the appointment time has come, and he's waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting a long, long time. Whew. He's wondering what's going on. He was thinking, he's the Prime Minister of the whole British Empire. So much responsibility. I guess he must be doing something very, very important that he cuts. I'm also, to get an appointment with the Prime Minister is such a big thing. I'm also an important person. He's making me wait. Maybe I'll just open the door slightly and look inside. and see what important matters he's engaged in. So he very gently opened the door and looked in, and there he saw Gladstone on the floor on his hands and knees with his grandson on his back playing like a horse. Gee up, get up, get moving. So this was the important matter that Gladstone was engaged in. Just sometimes he has to forget being the prime minister, and then there's so many important things to do, but he's got something more important to do, which is playing with his grandson. And the grandson, who has no power whatsoever in the universal affairs or in any affairs, is on his back and whipping him. Imaginatively whipping him and telling him, get up, gee up, in English, if you want to learn that. Gee up, that's what you say to a horse to get it moving. So love. Love is supreme. Yeah. Love is supreme. What's Gladstone? Gladstone's great adversary in the British Parliament was Disraeli. I remember something from school. I actually learned that at school. Disraeli was with the Tories, and Gladstone was with the Whig Party. So they were great adversaries. So Gladstone would never agree to have Disraeli sit on his back. Disraeli also a very great person. Sometimes Disraeli was the prime minister, then Gladstone like that. Just like it used to be here in Tamil Nadu, one time Karunanidhi and next time Jayalalitha, like that. So he would never agree, this Gladstone would never agree to have Disraeli do that to him, but he agreed to have his little boy do it. Because as long as the power equation is there, there's a question of prestige. But in the love equation, what's the solution to the love? You're in the mathematics class. You all got spared from that, being in the Gurukul. I hope you can do basic things like multiplying 3 squared times 2 squared. I hope you can do that. But you got spared so many mathematics. But in mathematics, you have to work out the equations, and you have to get it right. Otherwise, you'll fail the exam. Not only that, say you're using the equations for building bridges, and you don't get it right, then the bridge might be very well constructed, but then it might just fall down after 2 days. You've got to get your equations right. But in the love equation, there's no solution. It's the biggest mystery. People have been trying to understand it since time immemorial, and they still didn't understand it, and they never will understand it. There's no equation, then you can't work it out. What is this? You just accept. Therefore we have achintya, adbhuta, we have these words, inconceivable, adbhuta, just something which just amazing, that's all. Adbhuta rasa. There are the primary and secondary rasas. Adbhuta is included among the secondary rasas. Adbhuta, the rasa of wonder, amazement. But that is what's the predominant rasa in Vrindavan? We can say Madhurya rasa. Yeah, yeah. But in all the Adbhuta rasa, everything is amazing. It's always new and amazing. In Vaikuntha, everything's predictable, predictably nice. But in Vrindavan, nothing is predictable, and it's not always nice, but it's always sweet, even when it's bitter, just like in Gujarat. When they make Kerala, it's sweet. Not only Kerala, you see, Gujaratis, they're all devotees. You see, they're natural devotees. So they make the chapatis sweet, they make the dal sweet, they make the sabji sweet, everything is sweet. Madhuradi pater akila madhuram. But sometimes little bitterness helps to make the sweetness even sweeter. So we have, it's enigmatic. How can we understand? Here's Krishna, who would never, he would never agree to have Kamsa on his back. He's not humiliated by anyone. Even Jarasandha for some time thought, I made Krishna run away. But then Krishna just, he had some important work to do. Yeah, I mean, after all, he had to go to Dwarka, and then the marriage of Rukmini was coming up. So that was more important than defeating Jarasandha. But in due course of time, Krishna, he went, and he didn't even, Jarasandha thought he beat Krishna, but Krishna didn't even personally kill him. He had Bhima do it. So you can't humiliate Krishna, you can't overcome him. But then again, we get in Bhagavatam, Ajito Jitaha, he is conquered. How he is conquered? How he is humiliated? How he's subordinate, that's the whole point. He's subordinated. He becomes subordinate. He who is subordinate to no one, this is Tattva Jnana. He is subordinate to no one, but then we come to Rasa Jnanam. He becomes subordinate. He is. He begs for forgiveness from Radharani. This is avang manasa gochara. This is inexpressible in words, inconceivable by the mind. Now the Mayavadis, they ascribe this Vedic aphorism to the impersonal Brahman. Okay, you can say it's inconceivable, indescribable by words. All right, you can say that. But love is also indescribable by words. You can describe, just like you can describe impersonal Brahman with words, but the actual experience you can try to put in words, but it has to be experienced. Therefore, we don't preach this widely, because who will believe? If we take logically all these arguments with atheists, we can say logically Krishna is supreme. But then if we say that, yeah, Krishna is supreme, but actually he's subordinate to Radha, and they'll scoff. What is this? What is this idea of God? They cannot accept that God has become this whole thing, samsara vasana, deep-rooted desire for enjoyment. That's a very low level. One has to come above that. So even the yogi is supposed to come above samsara vasana. All kinds of vasanas, chitta nirodha, just stop all desires. That's the idea for the yogis. And then the yogis, dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashyanti yam yoginaha, they see him within their heart. And you're going to say that this person is also bound up by desire. It's ridiculous. They may say it's blasphemous. The Muslims say that even to think that God has a form is blasphemous. What to speak of him being subordinate, and then it becomes meaningless. And what to speak of him being lusty? Lusty, love, and they're just different words, and at least in this material world, they're different words. And Krishna, samsara vasana, he appears to be lusty. So Krishna, he appears to be lusty. He accepts. He accepts love. Not really. That again, we discuss samsara vasana baddha shrinkala. He's chained by desires for love. This is not the science of God. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. By the science of God, one becomes freed from material bondage. That is there in Bhagavatam. But simply by understanding the science of God, one cannot enter into Vrindavan. It's so apparently contradictory. And it's so similar. It seems so similar to Krishna's love in Vrindavan, seems so similar to that in the material world. His love in Vaikuntha, he's God, he's supreme, that we can accept. That's one kind of love. That's very much stressed in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. Bhaktavatsalya, how he's very kind to his devotees. Vatsalya means like the loving care and attention of a cow to her calf, parental. We love him like a child, and he loves us like a parent. But there's no concept there of how you can become a parent to Krishna, God the Father. And we have God the Father and God the Son in Christianity, and God the Holy Ghost. I don't know where the Holy Ghost came from. But anyway, you have God the Father and God the Son. But that God will become your Son, that is inconceivable. But Srila Prabhupada explains that also, that there can be such, and there should be such, is explained by Srila Prabhupada, following all the previous acharyas, that relationship of love with God, okay, very good. But a higher love than that for the Son for the Father is that of the Father for the Son. Because the father, the parents, father and mother, they serve the children. They have more love for the children than the children have for them. And if we're talking about love, then we have to come to conjugal love. And that's also accepted in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya between Narayana and Lakshmi. But you can't become Lakshmi. There's one Lakshmi. There's the whole of Vaikuntha, there's one Lakshmi. It may be said that there are other Lakshmis, but that's in a contextual way of saying. Otherwise, Narayan has one wife. He has so many wives because he has so many forms, but basically he has one wife. But then, in Vrindavan, everyone can kiss Krishna. It's a higher concept of God. But it seems so similar to that in this material world that it's very dangerous, because it can be very easily misconstrued, taken cheaply, misunderstood. That's one way it can be misunderstood, and it'll be misunderstood by people who scoff and say it's ridiculous and blasphemous. How can you say that God is in love with a woman? Love is the binding force in this material world. Yes, and Krishna agrees to be bound by love. Not agrees, but he's samsara vasana baddha shrinkala. He's bound up by love. But then again, we come to love means pain, suffering. In the beginning of our spiritual inquiry is to understand that life is full of pain, birth after birth. That's why I started this series of talks with this Ichha Dvesha Samutena, the Bhagavad Gita verse. We're looking up there and trying to work out what's going on up there, and meanwhile down here we can see very clearly that love means pain, love means repeated birth and death. And then we're going to talk about love up there. Love means pain, and God has pain. His pain, Krishna is Shatakoti Gopi Madhavaman Rakite Narilo Karijatan. The hundreds and thousands, millions, trillions, zillions of gopis, they cannot attract Krishna's mind in the absence of Radha. And Esho Esho Radhe Dakaya Sham, and then Sham, Krishna, is calling out, come, come Radha, but she doesn't come. He has to go after her. He's humiliated in front of so many women. That's the last thing any male wants is to be, isn't it? You don't want to be humiliated in front of women. It's the last, but Krishna, he's humiliated by becoming just a shriveled up and completely loses his composure. He wants Radha. He's exposed. So how can God accept suffering? The suffering of love. The suffering of love is more than the bodily suffering. How can He accept that? Then we can understand how great is Radha. We can literally understand, you can't understand. But at least theoretically we can get some idea what we're doing in this Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Gauriya Vaishnava teaching Aradhyo Bhagavan. That's the first line. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajay Satanaya Yad Taddhama Vrindavanam. Bhagavan is worshipable. Who do we mean by Bhagavan? Someone will say Bhagavan means this, someone will say Bhagavan means someone else. But we're talking about Bhagavan Narayan. No, not exactly. The son of the king of Vrindavan. The son of Nanda Maharaj. Taddhama Vrindavanam. Who lives in Vrindavan. His place is Vrindavan. Taddhama means Nanda Maharaj's place or Krishna's place. But then elsewhere we learn Radha Padankita Dham Jaranam Vrindavan. It's Radha's place more than Krishna's place. What's the second line of that? Aradhyo Bhagavan. What's the second line? Ramya Kachid Upasana Vraju Vadhena Ya Kalpita. So the best means of worship of Krishna is that of the wives of Vrindavan. Specifically says, Rajavadhu, the wives, which they excite Krishna's love. And not mentioned here, who's the supreme among those Rajavadhus, the wives of Vrindavan, is Radha. So, in an indirect way, saying Aradhyo Bhagavan. Okay, that is all right. Aradhyo Bhagavan, the supreme. Bhagavan means supreme. But then we have to say he's the son of Nanda Maharaj. It means already he's not supreme. And the highest love is some village girls. Who's the highest lover? Is it Brahma or Varuna or Indra or Rudra or the Maruts or the followers of the Vedas, or is it the yogis, or is it the suras or the asuras? No, some village girls. So indirectly it's saying Aradhyo Radha. Not directly, indirectly saying. We don't say that. Another reason we have to be so circumspect in these matters is that if we say Radha is supreme, then Shakti, and then you come to Kali worship. Because they say Radha, we don't see Radha, but we see Kali everywhere. She's the overseer of this material world. You can talk about the spiritual world. We didn't see the spiritual world. We see this material world all around us. Who's overseeing? Durga is overseeing. So that's another reason. We have to be very careful about all these things. Discussing these matters publicly. If something can be misunderstood, it will be misunderstood. That doesn't mean that we don't send children to school for studying to try to make them understand. But it can be very difficult trying to get people to understand. And ultimately it's beyond understanding anyway. If you tell people at the beginning, oh no, we're going to explain about the science of God, and anyway you won't understand it. And you say, why bother? Why should we bother studying Srimad Bhagavatam? What's the conclusion? Vrajalila. And well, how do we understand that? You won't understand. Then why should we bother? Because it's very delicious. Yeah, it's very sweet. But there's pain there also. Oh, really? Can we get to a place where there's no pain? Yeah, then you go to impersonal Brahman. No, don't do that. Better have the sweetness mixed with poison. There's not my words. You'll find in the writings of the Acharya. You'll find it right there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's sweetness mixed with poison. Seems to be like that. So we discussed at the beginning, we've come full circle, then we started discussing how ichha, desire, is binding in the material world. And then we discussed how Krishna in the spiritual world is also bound by desire, his saṃsāra vāsana. We worship Krishna to get free from saṃsāra vāsana, deep-rooted desires for material enjoyment. But he himself has saṃsāra vāsana. He who is the speaker of the highest philosophy, who is the object of all philosophy, who all philosophers ultimately are searching for him. Shankara, even Buddha, definitely Ramanuja, Madhva. Even in the Western world, there are so many great philosophers, with Socrates and Plato, and later on there were so many, Descartes and Kant, and so many, Bertrand Russell, and so many great philosophers. Ultimately, everyone is looking for Krishna. Some realize it, and some don't realize it. But philosophy leads us to analyze the whole situation. We analyze and see this world is full of suffering. Suffering is caused by material attachment. The binding, most binding attachment is the desire that arises between man and woman, pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantyam ahu. How will you tell this to Krishna? He already spoke all the philosophy. You tell him, Krishna, you're getting in maya now. You're not behaving properly. You're going to have a lot of trouble from this girl Radha. Really a lot of trouble. She looks nice, she smiles nicely, but she's a real hothead. She's going to get you in a lot of trouble. Get out of this maya. Come on, Krishna, you're in maya. And what will he say? Radha's bound me up. She literally binds him up. Sometimes she ties him up, literally. And what will he do? What will he do? If we worship him to get free and he's tied up, Prabhupada writes that, doesn't he? And that a person who's not liberated, someone who's bound can't release you. That in that Gita, Daivi Esha Gunamai in that purport. Someone who's bound up, he can't release you. Well, Krishna's also bound up, but bound up by the ropes of love. That's very nice. That is to be understood. But it's nothing to understand, beyond understanding. What will Krishna do? You tell him, you're in Maya, so what's he going to do? There's nothing for him to aspire for further. He's already in Vrindavan, Golok Vrindavan. There's nowhere to go higher. You tell him that there's all this love, it's just making a fool of you. You should aspire to merge in the impersonal Brahman. Well, he is the impersonal Brahman, so he's not going to merge into it. That's already there. What about going? Maybe you should just close up Vrindavan and say, okay, it was good for. So we tried it out. Let's just go to Vaikuntha. We'll go to Vaikuntha. Just be in Vaikuntha. Be happy. Is Radha there? No. No way. I'm not going to Vaikuntha. He's tied up in Vrindavan. He's not going to go to Vaikuntha. Radha has totally bound him with her love. That, what is that love? Pungsa Striya Mituni Bhav. The attraction between man and woman. Women, they bind men by the courting and flirting and their femininity. Femininity. Glancing out of the side. There's so much trouble. I used to see my sisters before they'd go out on a date with their boyfriend. They spend literally at least 2 hours taking a bath, putting on perfume, putting on all this stuff. And their whole, so many different things. Something for the eyebrows, something for the eyelashes, and so many things. I didn't even know there were so many things that you could put something on to make it beyond. So many ways. In Indian culture, everywhere all over the world, women have earrings, and in Indian culture they have nose rings, and so many things. By the femininity to attract. But Radha is the source of all femininity, and her femininity is that, her attraction is that of all, more, far more than all of females put together. Uma, Rama, Satya, Chandra, Rukmini, Radha, Abhata, Shabe, Amnaibani. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, speaking about Radha. Radha bhajane jadi mati nahi bello. Krishna bhajana tava akarane gelo. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings one song that if you don't worship Radha, Radha bhajane, if you don't have an inclination to worship Radha, then what's the meaning of your worshiping Krishna? What will you get from that? So in one line of that song, he says, Uma, Rama. Uma means the wife of Lord Shiva. Rama means the wife of Narayana. Satya. You could take that to mean Satya Bhama. She's also Radha, but in Dwaraka. Shachi, the wife of Lord Indra. Chandra. Chandra means Chandrabali. Another gopi, cousin of Radha. Rukmini, they're all avatars of Radha. Say the Vedas and disciplic succession. So So what is that? That femininity? What is that? The shooting of the Cupid's arrows? Srila Prabhupada writes in one place that Caesar could control her whole empire, but Cleopatra, by moving her eyes, her eyebrows, could control Caesar. So what is that? What is the movement of the eyebrows? I can do it. Well, if I do it, doesn't have any effect, but if a beautiful woman does it, then zing. That zing that Krishna gets from Radha is more than all the love of, forget Cleopatra and Romeo and Juliet and Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, and forget it. Put all of that, everyone in there, all the girls and men and in the whole universe, put it all together, and that's who's going to defeat Krishna? Radha, by her eyebrows and everything else about her, singing, her dancing, her cooking, her dressing, her smell, her soft touch, everything about her. So Krishna gets zinged by that. And there's pain also, pain of separation. Can you understand all this, what I'm talking about? Does it make sense? Can follow what I'm saying? I hope you can understand, because I can't understand. I'm talking, but and Krishna himself can't understand. So he can say, yes, I love Radha because of this and this and this and this. These are the reasons. She has all the qualities to please him. But ultimately, what is it? If you try to analyze, you can, even mundane love, you can get biology class and talk about the hormones and all this, but what is it exactly? You can't explain. What are you going to do? Philosophy. Let's bring philosophy to explain Krishna's attraction to Radha. And you can say, you can say that here in the material world you see, and it's a perverted reflection. What is philosophy? There's epistemology. Traditionally, in Western philosophy, it's understood there's epistemology, ontology, logic, and ethics. Four main departments. So where does that come? Love. Which department is that? It's actually ontology, but the very heart of Krishna is love. But that's not explainable. It doesn't, there's no epistemology. You can't measure Krishna or his love. To attempt to do so, mapiyate iti maya, to try to measure everything, that itself is maya, that is illusion. Logic, there's no logic. That at least everyone who studied love can understand there's no logic. That's why in Indian marriages, where there is love, but traditionally it's arranged in a very logical way. The parents arrange it, because the children, they can't expect to have any logic in this matter. So the parents arrange it. You have to see they're from the same caste and the same economic status, more or less. So many things have to be taken into consideration. Then you put them together and Pungsastriya Mituni Bhavametam. That will happen anyway. But it's put together logically, in a logical way. But then Krishna and Radha, it's from the logical point of view, it wasn't allowed to happen. And there's no question when she's already married, then there's no logic. Then it goes outside dharma. That's a concept you don't get in Western philosophy. You get epistemology, ontology, logic, ethics. Ethics, yeah, dharma, but no. There's much more to dharma than just ethics. So there's no philosophy to explain this. You get philosophy of, different departments, then you get philosophy of law. You can understand why there's philosophy of law. who understand even philosophy of science might help to keep science on track, and philosophy of language, so many different parts of philosophy. They say there's philosophy of love, and there are people who study it. And we have in the Bharat Muni, he has his Rasa Shastra, Nartya Shastra. But it's only analyzing, it doesn't explain. You can't explain it. Love is something that you do. People who actually love, they don't sit around talking about it, that, yeah, when you look at me like that, I think some hormones in my body, they start to move. They don't talk like that. It's something that you do. That's what Krishna does when he's really being himself. Discover yourself, right? We have courses, discover yourself. So if we put Krishna in a discover yourself course, if we look, who are you? Well, I'm God, and I sit on a throne, and people come and worship me. Are you really fully psychoanalyzed? Are you really fully satisfied with that? What do you want in your heart of hearts? And when the psychoanalyst digs into people and they start crying, and then Krishna starts crying, no, I just want Radha, that's all. But you people keep me on this throne here, what can I do? So that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. It's love, ultimately. That's what it comes to. And then it goes beyond words. Svarasikhi Siddhi Braja Gopitan Paramachanchala Sati Jogir Dhyan Nirbishesh Agyan Ekane Napai Stiti. This Svarasikhi, they translate this in English, I've seen the translation, spontaneous, but it's one of those words which you can call it spontaneous, but each individual gopi's personal propensity for loving and serving Krishna, that is the discussion. What is it? It's parama chanchala. It's most stithadi. We have that word. Stitha pragyasya ka bhasha. Stithadi muni ruchate. It's just the opposite. First of all, you become a stithadi muni, of consciousness very fixed. And then, if you're lucky, you escape from all of that. Stithadi muni, you escape from material chaos. And you become very peaceful. And then, if you're lucky, you escape from all this peacefulness. And then you go to Vrindavan, and there's no peace. Then the paramachanchala, their mind and their activity, unpredictable. One day, I hear this from men all the time, that one day the wife says this, and then you do something else, and then she says something else. There's no logic. No logic. That is their Swarasikhi Siddhi, how they please Krishna with their perfection in this way. Paramacha Ansati, they're all, a good wife, she doesn't harass her husband. She's very faithful. So that doesn't fit with paramachanchala. But yes, both things are there. And how will you understand this? Okay, let's do some meditation. Or let's try by some impersonal gyan. No. That won't work here. And you have to go to work here. Right? They're building a temple for Radha. Anyway, I'll just. And it goes on and on and on, doesn't it? There's no end. We're supposed to be going back to normalcy in Bhagavad Gita today. That's how I started the talk. Okay. No philosophy. Our prayojan is not material enjoyment, not even in Swargaloka. It's not nirvana. Our ultimate aim is not to not to go to the impersonal Brahman, not to go to Vaikuntha, not to go to Ayodhya, not to go to Dwarka, not to go to Mathura, but to serve Radha and Krishna. Who's supreme, Radha or Krishna? You can't say it is, you can't say it isn't, you can't say... It's Radha and Krishna. And some say Radha and some say Krishna. Some say Radha and Krishna. But no one says it's neither of them. So the argument will go on. Who's supreme? Radha. No, Krishna. Well, okay, let's prove it. Then you'll have a contest and see. Radhe Vrindavaneshwari. There's no philosophy here. The philosophy got left behind. Where did philosophy? Uddhava. It goes as far as Dwarka and Mathura. Uddhava. So he comes marching into Vrindavan to speak philosophy, and he ends up a very dangerous place. Uddhava comes, greatest philosopher. He's the disciple of the greatest philosopher, Brihaspati, sent by Krishna to give a philosophical... is a very dangerous place. He ended up as a piece of grass. That's what happens. A very dangerous place. If you try to bring philosophy to Vrindavan, of course, the greatest philosophers, Jiva Goswami was sitting in Vrindavan, giving the greatest philosophy. But ultimately, what are you going to do with philosophy? Radha and Krishna are dancing, and they're very hot, and they're tired. And what are you going to do? I say, Krishna, could you teach us this Bhagavad Gita, and what's this Dvaita and Advaita? Oh, you're not going to do that. Make a nice place for them to lie down, fan them, give them some nice cool water to drink. It's the land of service. Massage their feet. It's the land of love. Love means seva. Ultimately, it's not philosophy. Not that we reject philosophy. We have to come back to Bhagavad Gita. But ultimately, love means service. So you all go and take prasadam, prasada seva. And then you have to go on with your service of building a temple for Radha Krishna. And some of you, you're in your service now is study. Study all these things so you can tell others in future that Krishna is supreme and establish it. So please go. And Krishna willing, we'll say a few more things and get back to Bhagavad Gita tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Well, the real verse to finish this class. Parivadatu jano yatatita va nanu mukaro navayang vicharayamaha. Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Translation of what, which is that people, they'll say so many things. Let them say. We don't care. Being intoxicated with the wine of Hari Rasa, we'll roll around on the ground. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to quote this. He didn't roll on the ground, but he said, this is what we want to do. And we'll dance, we'll roll on the ground and dance like madmen. Hare Krishna. More till tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll see. If tomorrow we see, then tomorrow we'll see what's to be done, what's to be said.